The Guardian.
Football Daily with James Richardson and Barry Glendenning.
Football Daily from Vienna. Day 7 and the group of death is looking lively. The Dutch are smoking, the French look blunted, while Italy and Romania meet in a game like a Jesuit college. Plenty of crosses, very little scoring. We look forward to Saturday's action too. The freewheeling devil-may-care Greeks face Russia, while Sweden try and burst Spain's bubble. All that plus your posts, the news, and yet more reaction to Thursday's historic moment in Vienna when Austria conquered an actual point.
Football Daily from The Guardian at Euro 2008.
Hello, everybody. Well, back at the beer clinic in downtown Vienna today after our Bruce Springsteen-esque out in the streets, etc. moment yesterday, which met with a mixed-ish response. We'll get onto that a bit later on. Barry Glendenning here with me.
Hi, James.
Hi, Barry. And alongside him, there we go, Reinhard Krenhuber of Austria's top football magazine, Ballesterra, I should say.
Yeah, perfectly correct. Hello.
Hello, Reinhard. Thank you very much for coming and joining us today. It is very sweet to have you here, and lots to talk to you about. But I think the main thing is that you coming by coincided with the day of the tournament so far. We had two absolutely amazing matches. Yes?
Yes, I think so.
Okay, good. For me too. Barry, did you enjoy it?
Oh, they were brilliant. I did a blog on the Italy-Romania game.
Right.
And declared it to be the best game of the tournament so far.
But then you had to eat your words when Holland came out and did a number on France.
They certainly did do a number on France. And in a game that was arguably better.
Right. Okay, well, we might argue about that in a second or two. First of all, though, let's just round up those top news headlines. Bong.
Fresh from sticking decapitated Germans on their front pages, the Poles have been caught up in a fresh storm after Howard Webb awarded a last-minute penalty against them on Thursday. As the Prime Minister, I have to be balanced and collected. But last night, I wanted to kill, explained Poland's balanced and collected Prime Minister, Donald Tusk, who had murder on his mind.
Bong. Mr. and Mrs. Kaká have had a baby son. Chelsea are already preparing an offer. The bouncing boy weighs in at a healthy £8, about 51,999,993 less than the offer for his dad. Still, the chances of someone getting their hands on some Kaká are increasing with every change of the lad's nappy.
More bad news for Sir Alex Ferguson. While Real Madrid continue to woo Cristiano Ronaldo, Portugal now want Manchester United assistant manager Carlos Queiroz to replace Scolari as their national coach. With Vidal Sassoon now reportedly eyeing up Sir Alex's hairdryer, it looks like a case of would the last one out of Old Trafford please turn out the lights.
Football Daily from the Gersat Beer Clinic, Vienna, for Euro 2008.
Right then, Group C. What a humdinger of a day those four teams laid on Friday for us. And on the line now, I believe, is Dominic Fifield, who had the very great pleasure of being there in Zurich to see the Italy-Romania game. Dominic, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I'm here. I'm in a fast-emptying media centre in Zurich.
All right. Have you just seen the press conferences and stuff?
Italian journalists. Yeah. It's all winding up here. The London-looking Italians all sort of meandering out of the media centre now. Still thanking the Lord for Gianluigi Buffon at the end there, I think.
Right, but cursing... cursing the Lord that perfectly valid goal for Luca Toni way back at the start of the game wasn't actually given.
It did crop up in Donadoni's press conference, yes. It's all a big conspiracy. What was it? The offside that wasn't offside in the Dutch game and now this. It's all looking a bit awkward for him. And, of course, obviously what's going to happen now is that the Dutch will pick a second team against Romania in the last match. Romania will win and both Italy and France will go out.
So despite the fact that Buffon got them out of jail, there was a lot of despondency among the among the Italians, was there?
Yeah. I mean, it was a great game. Italy played fantastically well going forward, although I thought both teams defending left quite a lot to be desired. But to have had the goal disallowed and not being able to take any of those chances in the second half, they expected to win this match. They thought that they had to get 6 points from the last two games after what happened against the Dutch to get through, and I mean they should count themselves lucky that they still have a chance, because I've never seen a better penalty save than that. I actually think, I don't know if you've seen it again, but there's a theory going around here that he actually meant to palm it from his hand onto his boot and then get the ball away, because if he just had it down and the remaining would have come in and tied in. So it was just astonishing. He looked as if he was hanging in there. Just an amazing moment, and you can see the emotion on his face afterwards. He knew he'd done something that's very, very special.
Certainly was. What a special chap he is. But from what about the Romanians? How were they post-game? Was there an air of celebration after they conquered their second straight point?
They thought the Italians were lucky, obviously. So when you get a penalty 9 minutes from time to be world champions, you got to fancy your chances. But to be honest, I think they'll look at it in the cold light of day and think, well, okay, the Dutch are qualified. They might not play their strongest team in the last match. So if you beat them, then you're definitely through at the Italians and French expense. And they did play very well. One of their players has gone off to have an operation on his eye, apparently, which is slightly disturbing.
But, After that clash of heads, was that?
Yeah, clash of heads with Rat, the defensive midfielder, a lad called Radoy. Apparently gone off to hospital. He's broken his nose and he's having... I suspect it's on the eye socket. So that's a bit of a blow. I can't see him featuring this week. But going forward, they looked excellent. They were nothing like the team that played the French last week in what has to be the most tedious game of the tournament so far. They were very good, very impressive. And you know, I think Jonathan Wilson will be celebrating.
Yeah, indeed he will. Dominic, thank you very much for that. Look forward to speaking to you again soon.
All the best. Cheers.
Thanks, Dominic. Thanks. What did we all make of that match? Was it a fair result, first of all, Italy-Romania 1-1?
I thought it was a very fair result. It was a marvellous game. Neither team deserved to lose. Both could have won. Buffon's save was unbelievable. I still don't know if it was a fluke or if it was just the best save of all time. We're left now in the situation in the group that Romania, Italy, France could all finish with 2 points each. And then we go into goal difference of direct encounters, highest goals scored, whose dad could beat up the other, you know, someone else's dad, or who's got the toughest mum or whatever. So very interesting times in the group.
Boy, really. I mean, it's all been... looking extremely close. And it could go down to penalties, I think, or possibly no, because all three of them could end up on 2 points. What did you think, just before we move any further on? I mean, Donadoni got a lot of stick after the first game. He made a lot of changes. Ranieri brought in, Del Piero coming in at the start, who was making all sorts of classical references. He said Achilles was again called into battle. After you remember Achilles in the Trojan War, he went home, he came back again. But sadly, it didn't quite work out for Del Piero the way it did in Homer. The changes, Italy, much better, did you think, Reinhard?
No, I don't think so.
No?
No. Personally, I like Di Natale a lot, and I don't understand why he has put on Del Piero.
Right.
And, yeah, the other change is okay.
De Rossi for Gattuso, for Ambrosini, and Perotta coming in as well. Although Perotta didn't exactly shine. But they just looked a lot more purposeful, Italy, and bomb forward the whole time. And the fullbacks were extraordinary the way they were just getting forward. But nothing came of it, though, Barry, really.
Fabio Grosso must have got in 20 crosses in the first half alone. And Del Piero, or Luca Toni and Del Piero couldn't score between them. You know, through a combination of bad luck, some excellent goalkeeping by the Romanian keeper, and a bit of refereeing incompetence as well. But like I say, if either team had lost, they could have considered themselves very unfortunate. So a draw was the fair result, I think.
Well, there you go. Now, meantime, nothing remotely like a draw about the second game from Group C on Friday, and it was that extraordinary Netherlands-France performance. The Dutch have now played both the World Cup finalists. They've scored 7 against them and conceded just once. So much for this notion that they've got a dodgy defence. Is there anything weak about this Holland side, do you think, Reinhard?
I've seen them against Italy in the stadium. And it was very, very impressive. I think they don't let the opponents very much space. They're very, very quick, and they play often. They play one touch direct football, and yeah.
That's the thing, they don't seem to give anyone time to think. They just bomb down at you. The French got back into the game. I mean, first of all, it was Count, of all people, who scored with a decent header, actually. Then Van Persie with a brilliant goal. I mean, that was the thing we were discussing. The best goal of the tournament so far was maybe Snyder's in the game against Italy. And then, bang, they go and score another one. And then another one. Yeah. Henri pulls one back. And then within a minute, Robin's down the other end, scoring an absolutely extraordinary game from a goal from an impossible angle.
Yeah, just interesting you say about Thierry Henry's goal there. Our old friend Alan Green described it as just a tap-in, which I think is like calling Big Ben just a clock. But yeah, the Dutch have scored 7 goals now, 3 of them contenders for goal of the tournament so far. And at the end of the game, they had Robin, Van Persie, Schneider and Van Nistelrooy on the field. And Van Basten's tactics, well, it would be ludicrous to say they're questionable in bringing on so many attacking players. But, you know, as Kevin Keegan would say, if they score 4, it doesn't really matter how many they concede. But they're not conceding. Their defenders are doing okay.
Yeah. And Cruyff was watching from the stands, and there's this long-running kind of tactical battle now developing between the master and his pupil, because Cruyff saying that, you know, yeah, they're winning, but it's not the Dutch way. But you'd have to think that Cruyff would be pretty happy with the way Van Basten ran that game, no?
Yeah, I don't think they both get very good friends. But, yeah, he has to admit that this is a very successive...
Very successful
way of playing football.
It certainly is. It certainly is. Now, what is going to happen now? I mean, are the Dutch actually going to bother? Because they've mathematically assured of winning the group now. Do we think that they're going to bother with the game against Romania? Are they going to field a full-strength side? Are they going to go for a B team?
They don't have to. I mean, we saw Afellay in the first game for 15 minutes or 10 minutes, and he's quite good as well.
Mm.
And he has so many options, in offensive options, that I don't think it's
necessary.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got so many different players they can put out, and whatever happens, they are going to win the group and play whoever finishes second in Group D, which we'll talk a little bit more about Group D later on. We're going to find out a bit more about it tomorrow when they play, of course. And if Romania do win against Holland, then that means that Romania and Holland go through. If Romania draw, Barry, then the winner, is this right? The winner of Italy and France goes through.
That's
with
correct,
Holland.
Yes.
And if Romania lose, then they're all three, which is what you're talking about before. They're all three on 2 points, and my word, it gets extremely complicated at that point.
We're down to UEFA coefficients there. We'll get there in the end. And I looked them up on Wikipedia, so they may not be reliable, but I presume there's some, you know, bespectacled nerd out there.
Were you saying that France are better positioned than Italy, and Italy a better position than Romania as regards the UEFA coefficients?
No, but Italy... France has got has scored a goal against Romania.
Right.
And if they score another goal against Italy,
uh-huh,
and within a draw,
yes,
they are in a better position, because they have then scored more goals than Italy and Romania in the direct encounters.
Oof, okay. All Alice Claire, Claire then. Yes.
Not with me.
Yeah. All anyway. Right, then. Well, we'll just wait until the end of the tournament and tell you what happens.
Yes.
That'll be the easier way. Very good. Well, as I say, we'll be talking more about Group D later on, and who will be facing the Dutch in the quarterfinals. But before that, let's have a quick look through one or two of your posts. Yesterday's Al Fresco pod, drawing, as we mentioned at the start, a mixed response. Zouch in France, who's been a loyal fan of our podcast since the World Cup, has been very disappointed by this half-hearted Euros show. Can't you lads put a bit more effort into it? What's wrong with this podcast, Zouch? Sorry, you don't like it, actually. I mean, it is a slightly different format. And go on, Barry, you're going to weigh in now, aren't you?
It comes as no surprise to me to hear that Zouch is in France, because his post was very sniffy in French.
Well, he just doesn't like it, Barry. He doesn't like it. That's entirely his prerogative. Aurelio Zen...
I think his criticism was incredibly unfair.
Don't turn into Alan Green.
I'm not turning into Alan
Green.
All
right. Aurelio Zen, moving on, says, really enjoyed today's podcast, guys. Nice to see Football Daily deciding to mix it with the ordinary fans. No, we had them carefully vetted. Don't worry. Not sure about the quality of English of one or two of the people I heard speaking, but enough about Barry and James. Yalen Red in Vienna says, this was one of the best podcasts so far. You really captured the experience. Raphael almost made me feel sorry for the Germans. I can scarcely believe there's even a flicker of hope for Austria. Says Yalen Red, who's been to see Austria once or twice, hence his dumbfoundedness that there is a chance that the Austrians could go through. But they could, couldn't they, Reinhard? You must be so excited.
Yeah, I'm quite excited, because a match against Germany is always a special match for Austria. We're looking forward to it.
I imagine you are. Not only could you go through, but you could stop the Germans going through. Is that important to Austrians?
Yeah, I think that's to many people it's even more important than their own success.
Wow.
This goes back to the 1978 World Cup, and when Austria beat Germany 3-2 in the famous or infamous Cordoba match. And yeah, many people would like to repeat this this story.
But you'd have to score three goals to do something like that again. And frankly, having seen Austria, I can't imagine that happening in the space of 90 minutes.
Yeah, but there's still a guy on the bench who can score goals, and I hope he will be in the game, in the starting 11 on Monday.
Yeah, what's his name?
His name is Erwin Jimmy Hoffer.
Jimmy Hoffer?
Yes.
Okay, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, he's nicknamed after an American union leader.
Right.
And yeah,
who also used to go missing quite a lot.
Yes, yeah. We all know what happened to him.
Yeah. But well, that's remarkable. So realistically, 1978, there was that. Actually, speaking of Germany-Austria games, because you don't meet that often, do you? You won that game. And then in 1982, though, the next World Cup, there was the infamous scandal in Gijón.
Yeah,
Gijón, however you pronounce that, when Austria basically threw the game, yes.
Yeah, we would say Gijón.
Gijón, right? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it was. yeah, was not correct at all because Austria somehow unofficially agreed to lose the game 1-0, and both teams got to the next round, and Algeria went out, and this was. Yeah, very infamous incident, I would say.
Right. Were the players just kind of agreed it on the field between themselves, or how did it work?
Yeah. I think it was not outspoken, but...
A tacit agreement.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Republic of Ireland did that once before in a group with Holland, where it became apparent that a draw would do both teams, and Mick McCarthy and possibly Ruud Gullit, I can't remember who the Dutch captain was at the time, sort of had a little chat on the field, and it just dumped the ball around for the remainder of the game, and they both got out of the group.
Mm. There were boos and catcalls, though, were there not in Gijón that time for the Austrians? Yeah. And, it's something that I've seen from time to time. That's what I'm wondering about with Holland, how seriously they are going to take the game with Romania. A couple more posts in the meantime, he said, turning to his page. Oh, well, here's a couple about Germany. Mobley in Lyon says, I agree with Raphael that Germany's 4-4-2 is a problem. What happens when they're up against a proper team with a modern 4-3-2-1? Ooh. 4-2-3-1 formation with two front men who by and large occupy the same 20 metres of space. Balak and Frings risk being seriously outnumbered when they're up against a good passing team. Jim Nihil in Nuremberg says Lowe made the mistake to trust too much his players, and he thinks that also the fact that Lowe keeps going with the same tactical setup, which is what Raphael was talking about in our last podcast. And Malaguena Salarosa says the tournament is fast becoming like a night out with the Brazilian Ronaldo. A few big surprises as we get towards the business end of things. Croatia dominating the misguidedly clear favourites, and Austria's involvement extending beyond two games show that the strange can and does happen in the Euros, much like Ronaldo's hotel rooms. One more quick post. Oh, no, two, go on then. Zombies love brains in Ealing. Does anyone have a stat on the number of naturalised Brazilians playing in this tournament? It's starting to become ridiculous now. Even bloody Oman in the Middle East have Brazilians in their national team. Poland, Turkey, or Eduardo, who would have played for Croatia if not for injury. Any others? Well, there's Camoranesi, who's Argentine, who's playing for Italy, of course. Million Little Gods pitches in with Deco, who's actually Brazilian, of course, mm-hmm. for Portugal. And Marcos Senna of inverted commas Spain. Austria, perhaps that's what you need, to pitch in a few Brazilians right now. Anyone anyone there in the minor leagues you could ship in?
No, there was a story once, but this didn't never really happen.
Oh,
it was I don't remember the name of the Brazilian guy, but this was just a press thing, I think.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, but we got Ivica Savastić, who is of Croatian origin, and yeah, but this I
and
think
scored
this
scored the equaliser. Hey?
Yes. Mm.
Crikey, okay, very good. Other beyond the fact that your team is going into the final game still in with a chance, which is something that I don't think many Austrians expected, how are you feeling about the tournament all in all after a week? Has it been a success?
Actually, I've never seen so much enthusiasm about football in Austria, but I'm not sure if this enthusiastic atmosphere will hold on if the tournament is over.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, the longer that Austria stay in the tournament, the more it's going to build. But, I mean, there have been some grumblings and stuff about maybe a lack of atmosphere, certainly in Vienna, that the days when there haven't been matches on, things have been very quiet, and the fan zones and the pricing stuff. But all in all, I mean, everything's been going very smoothly, and the quality of football's been pretty good.
Yeah, but and the fan zones are a bit of a problem. This is a trend that got in from Germany,
right.
And everybody wanted to copy this mass thing. And I don't think it is possible to copy things from Germany to Austria.
Well, you've also got your own alternative, and there are various kind of alternative, unofficial fan zones. And we were at one last night, which was basically just a bar with a telly stuck in it, and lots of people standing around. It worked well enough for us. But you got a rather more organised one up by the Volksopera, yes, here
yeah.
in Vienna.
It's a kind of a cultural centre mm-hmm. where normally concerts take place, and I think it's quite a good place to see football. We do it together with a radio station. Who focuses on young people and alternative music, and I think this is a good mixture of people who like music and football, and yeah, it's relaxed atmosphere.
Okay, how much does a Coke and hot dog cost me there?
A Coke. I don't drink any Coke.
Oh, okay. No, just because we were at the real fan zone the other day, and it was, how much was it? 35 euros for, I think, three hot dogs and three Cokes?
Yes. Well, you paid for them, so I don't care. But to be fair, we have been made fun of the fan zone quite a lot, so it's only fair to add that we did venture down towards it last night, and it was absolutely wedged,
right.
Stuffed to the rafters.
It certainly was. You could not swing a cat in there.
And you tried.
I tried. Lord knows I gave it my best shot. But there you go. I tell you what, it's a huge game. I can't tear my mind away from this Austria-Germany game coming up on Monday. Because, of course, the other news is that Schweinsteiger's suspended for the Germans. But also, Podolski's in doubt now. I read that he's got, an ankle injury. Doubtful, according to Jogi Löw, for Monday's game. Which, given that he scored all of Germany's goals so far, has to be a big boost for Austrian hopes. As does the fact that Jens Lehmann isn't injured.
But Jens Lehmann, we played the Germans in February.
Yes.
And he made a quite dodgy performance.
Yes.
And we would like to repeat him.
You'd like him to be there again this time. What was the score when you played them in February?
It was 0-3. But we played a very good first half in which we dominated the Germans.
But didn't actually convert any of your chances?
Yes.
Ah, okay. Right. Okay,
you
very
see
good.
A pattern emerging.
Right, well, there you go. Well, we're all looking forward to Monday's game, that's for sure. But before that, though, there's Group D, which we're going to discuss right after this.
We went to Vienna for Euro 2008, and all you got was this lousy podcast.
Group D, Saturday, Russia-Greece, the winners of the first European Championship ever, against the winners of the last European Championship, Russia and Greece respectively. Russia, the only side to beat the Greeks in 2004. They both need to win after big defeats in their opening games. You'd probably favour the Russians for this, wouldn't you, Reinhard?
Of course.
Yes.
Yeah.
Although the Greeks are saying, we are going to be a different team. If we win, we can't tell you if we'll win or lose, but we won't be the same team as we were against Sweden, the captain Angelos Basinas has said. And I think we can all breathe a hearty sigh of relief. Sounds attacking. It sounds, you know, forward-thinking.
But I think this is four defenders, three defensive midfield players and three offensive midfield players.
Oh, Reinhard. All right, then. I was just trying to get excited about that. Okay, well, how about the Russians? They also are looking for a different mentality after the suffering. Do you know this was their heaviest loss in European Championship history, that 4-1 drubbing by Spain?
Oh.
Mm.
And, I think any team would have got drubbed by Spain
yes.
that occasion. It all depends on how Russia's players bounce back. They're all very young and inexperienced, which would suggest they may not bounce back or it may affect them. But young players are resilient, so who knows. Greece are difficult to break down. They don't have when things go wrong for them, they don't have a plan B to fall back on. So I would imagine whoever scores the first goal will win that game.
Oh, unless it's Greece, of course, because I fancy that Russia could overcome going a goal down. They do have Pavlyuchenko in some doubt, though. He had a thigh problem, missed training on Thursday, and I think on Friday too. He was the scorer of their goal against Spain, and it would certainly be a blow given that Arshavin, or however you pronounce that, is already out. He's serving the second game of his two-match suspension.
I think Pavlyuchenko would be a huge loss in that game because he's very good in the air, and Greece's strong point, central defenders, big lumbering oafs who clear every ball that's put in. So I think Pavlyuchenko would be essential if Russia are to win. Arshavin must be absolutely kicking himself on the bench for getting sent off so needlessly against Andorra.
You're channeling Jonathan Wilson, Barry.
I have indeed, yes.
Outstanding. Hey, I tell you what, Sweden-Spain then, the other game. Try and channel Sid Lowe on this. We had a one or two problems getting hold of Sid with our ongoing telephonic misery, which is due to be resolved any time now.
Well, so ask me a question.
All right, then. Spain finished... okay, what question am I going to ask you? Well, are they as good as they looked in that 4-1 thrashing of the Russians?
Are they as good as they looked in that 4-1 thrashing of the Russians?
Yes, they are as good as that
4-1. Yes, yes, I think they are as good as they looked in that 4-1 thrashing of the Russians. The two youngsters up front, absolutely sensational in that 4-1 thrashing of the Russians. And if they reproduce that form, it's difficult to see anyone getting a sniff of a goal against Spain.
Well, one thing you should say is that honours were very much even when these two teams met in qualifying, because, of course, they were in the same qualifying group, Sweden and Spain, and the Scandinavians won 2-0 at home. The Spanish got a 3-0 win in Madrid last November. But they just looked amazing, didn't they, Spain? What do you think? They had that 4-1 win over Russia. We saw Holland today get that 4-1 win over the French. Which team do you think looked better, Reinhard?
I think the Dutch team.
Yeah?
Yeah. Because the opponents were a bit...
Tougher.
Tougher, yes.
Yeah. Okay, well, no changes expected in the Spanish team. David Villa, you probably saw, got a hairline fracture in his finger while celebrating. He got it stuck in Fernando Torres, quite literally. What kind of goal celebration they were doing, I'm not sure. But
quite an impressive feat, considering Torres wasn't even on the field anymore at that stage. But
Torres got a bit upset with Aragonés after being taken off, but he assures everybody that there's no problem between him and the manager, even though he looked utterly miserable as he came on. Sweden, I should say, have got one or two injuries themselves to worry about. Christian Willemsen, who's out, and Alexandersen, who I think his tournament is over, isn't it?
But this will bring younger players in, and I think this is a good point for Sweden, because Lagerbäck is a very, very conservative guy, and now he has to change his lineup.
Because it was an incredibly old lineup, wasn't it? That they had on in the game against the Greeks. Zlatan Ibrahimovic? Barry's jury is still out on Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Are you a fan, Reinhard?
Yeah, I like him a lot, because he... you never know what happens next when he's on the ball, and he scores impressive goals. When we talked about the best goals in the tournament so far, we also have to mention Ibrahimovic's strike.
That's a very good point. Well, you know, the Swedish, I don't think that the Spanish are going to find it as easy this time. The Swedish are very capable. They can defend well. They're well organised in midfield, and they do have Ibrahimovic and, of course, Henrik Larsson up front. So you really wouldn't want to write them off. However, any chance of a prediction from you, Barry?
I will go for an emphatic Spanish victory.
Really, will you now? And Russia, Greece?
Russia.
Reinhard?
I will say...
Simpler just to say the opposite of what Barry said. Yeah, he's completely wrong always.
Sweden will win.
Yes.
2-1.
Really?
And the other game, I think Russia, the Greeks will go out of tournament.
Yeah, okay. Are you any good with predictions usually? I mean, I know you know a lot about football, but are you good with predictions?
Sometimes.
Okay, that's an interesting one with that Sweden.
I'm not that confident about Russia. I'm only predicting them because I predicted them that they would get to the final.
Right, really?
And, so I have to kind of stick by my complete lack of conviction.
Right, very good. Well, I think that probably brings us to an end today. We'll be back on Saturday night, Sunday morning, with a roundup of all the Group D second games. So join us for that. We'll have various other excitements as well, I am sure, for your delectation, as well as guests and that. But in the meantime, many, many thanks to Reinhard Krenhuber of Ballesterra.
Thanks a lot.
No, thank you. And thank you, your nation, for your hospitality thus far, because I'm really enjoying this tournament, and I know that's only going to get the enjoyment's going to increase, Barry, as you know, things build to a climax, etc. Thank you in the meantime. Hey,
you're very welcome.
And you, producer Pete, and another producer Pete, who's arrived in town. And thanks to the other producer Pete, who's now going to be leaving town. And many, many thanks for all your hard work. And you, the listener, working harder than anybody, we'll be back tomorrow, should you care to find us, same place. Ta-ra!
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.